May my words and the thoughts of all our hearts be acceptable to God. Amen. He arrived at the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. As Jesus stepped out onto land, a man of the city who had demons met him. Perhaps we find the gospel stories where Jesus encounters demons to be rather difficult. Our view of the world is very different and expressed differently also. But one commentator points out all the demons that Jesus confronts have three things in common. They cause self-destructive behaviour in the victim. The victim feels trapped. And the demons, what has happened to them, separates the victims from normal living in the family circle. And perhaps all of that begins to make us think. As you know, I used to do some prison chaplaincy work, latterly at Bullingdon near Bicester, which is a men's prison, and before that in Holloway Prison with women. And one of the duties of the prison chaplains is to visit the segregation unit each day. And the prisoners there are kept for a while, sometimes as punishment, sometimes as for their own protection away from others who might hurt or damage them. And sometimes one would go along to the unit and be immediately aware that all was not well. Lots of officers around, noise and shouting perhaps, disturbance. It's not a good time, is it, I would say. No, would be the terse response, and away I would go to return later. Later on I might find out what had happened. Sometimes one of the prisoners had exploded, as it were, trashed their cell, perhaps attacked officers, had to be restrained. This happened with the women and the men, both of them. But it wasn't an unusual occurrence. Someone would totally lose control, react irrationally to perhaps something small that had happened that they didn't like, sometimes with violence, as I say, sometimes smashing things, sometimes attacking people, shouting and screaming. That person could seem possessed, just like the people we read about in the gospel stories of demon possession. So that while we perhaps don't use the language of demons and spirits anymore, at least in our own Western culture, we can see the reality in the gospel story. And in prisoners, you might imagine, many of the prisoners are in a cycle of drug and alcohol dependency and petty theft, a cycle from which they don't seem to be able to escape. They're not in control of their lives. They are, in a sense, possessed by their lifestyle, by their circumstances, by the choices that they have made at times in their lives. One traditional way of thinking about the language of demons is that the demons represent the evils that assail us and prevent us from living an abundant life. And here are those three things that I mentioned at the beginning: self-destructive behaviour, feeling trapped, being separated from normal living. We can see all of these in the lives of the prisoners that I mentioned. And there are many others, of course, who are not in prison, who are possessed by addiction to drugs or alcohol or gaming or gambling. And we might think, well, all these are very extreme examples. But we might ask, what prevents us from abundant living? What controls us and hems us in? Perhaps we all have our own demons. Sometimes they can be negative things, things that we wish we hadn't done, or things that we wish we had done, leaving us with guilt that won't go away, that we dwell upon, that hems us in, as it were, possesses us. And we remember those words of the Apostle Paul, I do not do the good that I want, but the evil that I do not want is what I do. So negative things we wish hadn't happened. Well, we can be hemmed in and controlled by something which should be positive, our duty, things that we feel that we must do. Bob, in a sense, was touching on that with all the things that began to be become tasks that were asked to be done at church, and that perhaps is a particular context where we can feel things that we must do, but they can hem us in. I thought about William Blake's poem, London. As the poet wanders through London, he says, in every cry of every man, in every infant's cry of fear, in every voice, in every man, the mind-forged manacles I hear. Mind-forged manacles. A wonderful phrase. Things which, within ourselves, keep us trapped. Or in Dickens' A Christmas Carol, Jacob Marley's ghost wears the chains that he forged in life. So in a sense, we often allow ourselves, as it were, to be possessed by things in life. All this made me think also of the refugees and asylum seekers that I mentioned earlier, people fleeing from disparate situations in their own land and arriving in a new place, but often trapped by the demands of the system, often being asked to face their demons, to answer endless questions about the experiences that they want to forget, perhaps separated from family, unable to work, imprisoned by what has happened to them, as it were. And that commentator that I was reading points out the similarities between the demon-possessed man in our gospel story and the demons that possess us. He was totally cut up from family and society. He lived in the tombs, probably in caves that were used as burying places. He was driven out by the demon into the wilds. In other words, he was separated from other people, from his family, from normal life. And the demons were harming him. What changes things? The man, or at least the spirits possessing him, recognize who Jesus is, and he's wary. He knows that it means change. What have you got to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God. There's something in all of this about recognizing our need and recognizing our own inability to change things by ourselves. I've perhaps mentioned before that many of the prisoners that I used to meet seemed to be a bit more interested in things of faith than the general run of the mill of people out in society. Now, there are all sorts of reasons for this, one of which, at least coming to chapel, gets you out of your cell. But perhaps there's also something about recognising the need for strength beyond ourselves. Strength to help deal with that which possesses us, which holds us back from abundant living. Something that the men and the women sometimes saw and tried to reach out to, even if not always successfully. The man in the gospel story could not heal himself. He needed help. He needed the healing power of God, which he experienced through Jesus, who released him from the demons that were imprisoning him. But he needed something else. At the end of the story, the man had been healed, it says. A word from the Greek, sozo, which can also be translated as saved or delivered or made whole. He's not only delivered from the demons, but he's been restored as a person. He sits there with Jesus, dressed, behaving like everyone else. And he's welcomed back into the community, restored back. In almost all of Jesus' stories of healing, there is restoration. Restoration to family, restoration back into the community. For the healing of demons today, the fellowship of family, of community, of congregation for people who are part of church, it's all key to restoration. Becoming free from our demons is seldom a do-it-yourself project. We need help. We need God's help then we need the help of other people. The prisoners sometimes reached out to God, but they also needed professional help and the support of others, family and friends. Where it was obvious that someone was on their own, and you felt that they would struggle to change. I've been focusing on personal demons, but there is a social aspect. I mentioned asylum seekers in our society. And there's a social, a political aspect, as it were, to the gospel story, which commentators, or at least some of them, point out. For the demon's name is Legion. And apparently the Greek used by Luke in the confrontation between the man and the demons is reminiscent of words used for two armies meeting. And commentators also tell us that there was a massacre in the area by the Roman legions after the time of Jesus, but probably some years before Luke's gospel was written. And one of the Roman legions stationed in the area used the symbol of a boar, a pig, as one of its symbols on coins. So pigs would have seemed a fitting destination for Legion, the demons. So just a sort of almost background there to perhaps a different slant. John Wesley, the founder of Methodism, identified demons as the social ills of the day, such as slavery or drunkenness, evils that assail people, prevent them from living an abundant life. And as we know, many people who are in prison come from difficult and poor backgrounds. The circumstances of life and upbringing, poverty, have helped towards the lives that they lead. What can we do? On the website of Housing Justice, a Christian campaigning group, says their churches are not simply in the business of binding up wounds. And Jesus, not just healing, but also enabling people back into their community. He doesn't let the man follow him. He says, go back and tell people, go back to your own community. Church is not simply in the business of binding up wounds, but also called to ask awkward questions about why the wounds were inflicted in the first place. So as a church and as individual Christian folk, it's right that we think about the demons imprisoning people in our society and in our world, and make our contribution in whatever way we can, whether that be campaigning, giving time and money, or just talking to those that we meet. Jesus said to the man who was freed from his demons, return to your home, declare how much God has done for you. And so he went away, proclaiming throughout the city how much Jesus had done for him. And that's our calling also, to share what our faith means to us, as Bob has done for us this morning, and also to share the implications of that faith for how we see the society and the world around, to be a prophetic voice. May God help us in that task. Amen.